Hello, John Terrell here. We are diving into a review of Neon Dynasty, the upcoming Magic set that marks a return to Kamigawa. This set is awesome. It's got all sorts of tools for cube designers. We'll be looking today at the additions that I'm making to my high-powered cube, and tune in next time if you want to hear the additions that I'll be making to my lower-powered environment. Welcome to Cultic Cube, where we cube religiously. We make you better at cube and make your cube better. I am adding 21 cards from this set to my high-powered cube environment, which I call Alaesis. This is a vintage unpowered cube, so let's get into it. I'll be reading the cards for those listening at home. So first up, we've got a white card, Lion Sash. This is one and a white for an artifact, creature, equipment, cat. Wow, that's a long type line. There are many long type lines in this set. So this is a 1/1 creature, and it has the ability pay a white and exile target card from a graveyard. If it was a permanent card, put a +1/+1 counter on Lion Sash. It also says equipped creature gets +1/+1 for each +1/+1 counter on Lion Sash. How do we equip it, you ask? Well, it has reconfigure 2. So you can pay 2 generic mana and attach to target creature you control or unattach from a creature. Reconfigure only as a sorcery. While attached, it is not a creature. So we've got a creature that can become an equipment, or you can take it off and make it a creature again at will. That's kind of exciting. This feels a little similar to the effort in Theros to fix aura enchantments through Bestow. So you sort of always get your thing when you're casting something with Bestow, even if the target of bestowing gets doombladed out from underneath you or whatever. Okay, so Lion Sash. This looks a lot like Scavenging Ooze, of course. So we've got a white Scavenging Ooze of a sort. There are some trade-offs. This thing starts smaller than Scavenging Ooze does, because it starts as a 1-1 instead of a 2-2. It doesn't gain you life. There's not that tiny little life drip that Scavenging Ooze affords you. But upsides include, firstly, that you can equip this thing. That's big game. You can stick this on something evasive and go to town. Also, you get the +1/+1 counter on this, even for things that aren't creatures, right? So for fetches, for example. And in Alaesis, I run 2 cycles of fetch lands. I run double fetches, so that increases the value of this thing, I think. So this thing seems quite good. It's graveyard hate, so you have to be in it for a hate bear. You have to be in it on something that can hate out the reanimator deck. But if you are, then this thing's awesome. Next, we have Spirited Companion. This is one and a white for an enchantment creature, dog. That's a 1/1. When Spirited Companion enters the battlefield, draw a card. We've got an Elvish Visionary in white, right? That may not sound like the most exciting thing in the world, but if you have followed my work in the past, then you know that I am gaga for cantrips. Not a splashy card, maybe, but an incredibly welcome one. This card just replaces itself at a really quite inexpensive cost. Okay, next up we have the first of our Planeswalkers. There are 4 Planeswalkers in this set, and remarkably, I think they're all quite good. So, this is the Wandering Emperor for 2 white-white. She enters with 3 loyalty. And here's her text box. She's got flash. Wow, she's got flash. Flash on a Planeswalker. As long as the Wandering Emperor entered the battlefield this turn, you may activate her loyalty abilities anytime you could cast an instant. That's sweet. You flash this thing in on an opponent's turn, and you get to activate it on the opponent's turn. You get sort of one extra activation off of this than you normally would, right? Because then assuming that the card doesn't die straight away on opponent's turn, you untap with it in play and you get to activate it again, which is when you would normally be activating it since you'd typically cast a Planeswalker on your turn. She enters with 3 loyalty. She's got a +1, which is put a +1/+1 counter on up to 1 target creature. It gains first strike until end of turn. Her -1 is create a 2/2 white samurai creature token with vigilance. And she's got a -2, exile target tapped creature, and you gain 2 life. This seems great. You get a permanent buff for something and a temporary buff in the form of First Strike. That's a cool combat trick kind of ability. She protects herself with the down tick, which is just a minus one down tick, which is kind of nice. And she makes a bear that has vigilance. That seems great. Also a good combat trick, as it turns out. Her quote-unquote ultimate, it's not much of an ultimate in the sense that it's not hugely expensive in game winning, but it exiles an opponent's creature. It doesn't have to be opponents, I guess, but it exiles a creature and it gives you a little drip of life. Another great combat trick, right? So she can function as a 4-mana removal spell when enemies attacking. That's cool. It's an exciting card. I like it. It's an exciting card for aggressive strategies, of course. You want to be putting this in a white weenie sort of deck. And I'm perfectly comfortable putting 4-mana spells in my white weenie deck as top end. I don't really want to go higher up the curve than that in these white aggro decks. But 4 is fine, and we've got some good choices at 4 that I'm happy running already. So Elspeth Sun's Nemesis and Gideon Ally of Zendikar, especially Gideon Ally of Zendikar, is, you know, I'd consider a classic of a white aggro strategy these days. And, I mean, there are other Elspeths as well that could be in this conversation. Anyway, good card. Okay, let's move to blue. Our first blue card is Disruption Protocol. All right, this is blue-blue for an instant. As an additional cost to cast this spell, tap an untapped artifact you control or pay one generic mana. And then it says counter-target spell. So here we've got our very traditional cancel, but with set mechanic in it. Because it's not precisely set mechanic, but cares about artifacts. I mean, you need some density of artifacts in order to make this work. But if you have that, then this seems very good. Because you can turn some, I don't know, 1/1 defender construct from Duretti or something into mana to pay for this thing. Or some servo or whatever you've got lying around. So if you're in it for a cancel, that can sometimes be a counterspell, provided that you've got some density of artifacts that your players can be working with, then this seems like a really good card. All right, next, Mnemonic Sphere. This is 1 and a blue for an artifact, and it says pay 1 and a blue and sacrifice Mnemonic Sphere, and you get to draw 2 cards. Also, it has a channel ability. So you can pay a single blue mana, you can discard this card, and then you draw a card. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited about this card too. You remember what I said about liking cantrips? Here is an excellent one. So here's a card that has, you know, it's a modal card. For a single blue mana, this card can just replace itself. And it can do so in a way that can't be interacted with, right? It's difficult to interact with it. Can't be countered with like a cancel. You can do this at instant speed. That seems great. Alternatively, you can draw 2 cards off of this thing for 4 mana, and that's 4 mana that you're paying on an installment plan. So a divination that costs 4, that may not sound like the best deal in the world, but I think it's a fine package because you get to split up that cost. You get a permanent out of the deal. You get an artifact out of the deal. You could well care about artifact count, right? And it's got this other mode where you pitch it for a single blue mana and draw another card. This card, very good. I'm very excited about it. Okay, next up we have the Reality Chip. This costs 1 and a blue for a, hold on to your hats, legendary artifact creature, equipment, jellyfish. Gosh, that's a mouthful. They had to make the typeface real small on the type line here to fit all that in, especially given that the set symbol is like enormous somehow, that big Mount Fuji or whatever we've got here. What does this card do? It's an 0/4. You may look at the top card of your library anytime. As long as the reality chip is attached to a creature, you may play lands and cast spells from the top of your library. And it has reconfigure for 2 and a blue. So once you do attach it to something, then you've got a Future Sight on your hands. Future Sight, you probably recall, is an enchantment. It costs 2 blue, blue, blue. And it says play with the top card of your library revealed, and you may play the top card of your library. That's fun. Look, I think that the reality chip is honestly not a super impressive card. This card is sort of low on my list of cards I'm excited about, truth be known. But I've got a Johnny or Jenny's love of Future Sight. I love playing with this card. I have cubed it at points in time, although not for many years. It's the, you know, it's a 5-mana do nothing. This card is pretty similar. It, you know, in fact, costs 5 to get it going the way you want it going. And also you have to equip it to a creature. The floor of this thing is that it's a 2-mana wall, 0/4 wall, that, you know, lets you see what you're going to draw next. That's not the worst thing in control decks, all right? Provides some protection against the Goblin Guides and Ragavans and so on of the world. But also, the floor is not great, and the ceiling is cute, but it still opens you up to the usual problems that you might have when you go to equip something and your equipped target gets doom-bladed out from underneath you or whatever. So you can kind of get blown out in a way that represents a tempo loss anyway, if not card disadvantage. This is an iffy card, but it's cute and I want to try it. All right, next up, Tezzeret, Betrayer of Flesh. Tezzeret is 2 blue-blue for a legendary Planeswalker Tezzeret. He enters with 4 loyalty. He's got a static. The first activated ability of an artifact you activate each turn costs 2 less to activate. His +1 says draw 2 cards, then discard 2 cards unless you discard an artifact card. Okay, that's cool. We got a thirst for knowledge. -2, target artifact becomes an artifact creature. If it isn't a vehicle, it has base power and toughness 4/4. This guy does protect himself and protect himself quite well with a 4/4, provided you have an artifact. But presumably, you're not playing this guy unless you've got artifacts, right? And then finally, he's got an ultimate -6. You get an emblem with whenever an artifact you control becomes tapped, draw a card. That's nice, and it's not going to take him that long to get to 6, right? Because he enters with 4. If you go ++, then you're at 6. And then he draws you a bunch of cards. So this guy is competitively costed for 4 mana, entering with 4 loyalty. His static is cool. It is probably not at its best in Eleusis, in this particular cube. But this can also just be a relatively aggressive card. You could be running some kind of blue artifact tempo deck that could absolutely be a real deck, and then this guy's spitting out 4/4s and drawing you a bunch of extra cards. That seems really good. Okay, on to black. Blade of the Oni. This is 1 and a black for an artifact creature equipment demon. Okay, we got another one of these reconfigure cards. So it's a 3/1 for the base rate creature here. It has menace, and it says equipped creature has base power and toughness 5/5, has menace, and is a black demon in addition to its other colors and types, and has reconfigure for 2 black-black. This is a card that's not for every cube. In Eleusis, I am running a black aggro package, and that's where I think this card wants to be. So for 2 mana, you get a 3/1 with menace. You know, we're not over the moon to put that in our cubes or in our decks necessarily, but also that's not bad. It's not a terrible floor. And then you can pay 4 mana to equip this to some little guy that you got, and all of a sudden that little guy turns into a 5/5 with menace. That seems pretty powerful. This card is, I don't know, I'm not like super duper excited about this card, but I think it has potential if you're interested in black aggro, so I'm gonna try it. Let me pause for just a moment to say that Cultic Cube is supported by you. I have a Patreon page where you can pledge to support the work of Cultic Cube directly. I also have affiliate relationships with TCG Player and Inked Gaming and Amazon. I've also been having a lot of fun with the Cultic Bestiary project, which is available on Etsy. I've got tokens that are taken straight from the pages of illuminated medieval manuscripts. I think they're gorgeous, and I've been excited by the response to them. So you should definitely check that project out on my Etsy page. Thank you for your support. All right, let's move to red. Experimental Synthesizer. This is a single red mana for an artifact. When Experimental Synthesizer enters or leaves the battlefield, exile the top card of your library. Until end of turn, you may play that card. And it has an activated ability for 2 and a red. You can sack this thing, and you create a 2/2 white samurai creature token with vigilance. Activate only as a sorcery. This is another card I'm really excited about. You'll notice it looks quite a bit like Mnemonic Sphere, that blue artifact we were looking at that draws you a couple cards. So here we've got this 1-mana card that is an artifact, so it is great for artifact synergies. It puts an artifact on the field on turn one for welder or tinker shenanigans if you're into that kind of thing. This, you know, more or less draws you a card. That's not strictly true, clearly, but at a certain point in the game, it's pretty close. It draws a card when it enters or leaves. You know, you can dream of blink shenanigans that you might do with this thing. That would be cute. But even leaving that aside, which Eleusis isn't interested in except maybe incidentally in tiny ways, here's just the single mana card that has the ability to draw you a couple of cards, and it sacks itself, so it allows you to get the second card off of it whenever you would like to do that. It doesn't rely on something else sacking it for you. And when you sack this thing, you're making a 2/2 with vigilance. So you've got this Grey Ogre where you pay 3 and you end up with a 2/2. Although granted, you paid 1 earlier on this installment plan. So not precisely a Grey Ogre. This card's super, super exciting. Some years ago, 10 years ago, more than 10 years ago, I just loved playing a Tezzeret control deck in Standard. Oh, this was my pet deck. It was a glacially slow deck that relied on grinding card advantage using the Wellsprings, like Mycosynth Wellspring and Ichor Wellspring. And so these things, you know, give you a card or give you a land when they are put in the yard, but you had to have some other way to put them in the yard. And there were various ways you could do that, like later Trading Post was a great card for the deck. Anyway, what I'm getting at is that Experimental Synthesizer, oh, wow, I would have killed for this card in the deck. It would have been amazing in the deck. Because here's this card that just gives you that value as soon as it enters the battlefield, and then you get it again when it leaves the battlefield, and it destroys itself, and it gives you more value when it destroys itself. Oh my gosh, what a card. I love this card. Okay, next up we got kind of an odd one. Fable of the Mirror Breaker. It's a saga for 2 and a red, but I don't even want you to look at that. I want to direct your attention to the back of this card, which is Reflection of Kiki Jiki. This saga, when it reaches the third chapter or whatever it's called, it flips. It becomes this creature, an enchantment creature, goblin shaman. It's a 2/2, and it has the ability, pay 1 generic mana and tap it, and you create a token that's a copy of another target non-legendary creature you control, except it has haste. Sacrifice it at the beginning of the next end step. So here we've got kind of a fixed Kiki Jiki, the Mirror Breaker. I mean, look, it's not exactly fixed. It can still do degenerate things, but it has additional limitations, and importantly, it costs mana to activate its ability, so you can't just literally go infinite with it like you can with Kiki or Twin, and one of the classic combo pieces in this 2-card A plus B combo. But, you know, it still does broken things. I'm talking about this card because I am planning to add this card pre-flipped to my cube. Right now, I'm thinking I'm going to cost the card at red-red, so make it 2 mana, 2 red pips in order to cast it. So I'm going to try it there. That might be a little aggressive. Maybe it's better at 3, but I don't know. I think we'll see. We'll see. Let's try red-red. This may not be your cup of tea at all, messing with cards in this way, and I totally understand that. I don't do this a ton, but I do errata cards sometimes, and in fact, you may have seen a video I have from some time ago when I talk about running some of the cards from Ixalan Block pre-flipped. The only one that has stayed in the cube, but it, you know, it's still in the cube since Ixalan now, is Conqueror's Galleon. I run pre-flipped as this land that loots and draws cards and regrows things. Oh, it's awesome. I love that. And big shout out to my friend Fleischdog, who's been on the podcast, maybe the third podcast I did. He joined me for an interview. He's great people, and he's the person who suggested to me doing the running those Ixalan cards pre-flipped. Next, we've got Rabbit Battery. This is a single red mana for an artifact creature, Equipment Rabbit. Equipment Rabbit, huh? It's a 1/1. It's going to have reconfigure, of course. Has reconfigure for a red mana. It's got haste, and equipped creature gets +1/+1 and has haste. This seems like a great little card. Raging Goblin, not worth a slot in most cubes. We've had Raging Goblin-like cards with some upside that can pull their weight. I've still got Bomat Courier in Eleusis. I don't know. Bomat Courier, I don't know that it's ever been amazing, and you know, I'm not super happy with it in the cube. In this year of ours, 2022, Rabbit Battery seems like an upgrade because on the one hand, you can cast it on turn one as a Raging Goblin and just get in there for 1. That's cool. but then also for a single mana, you can equip it to something else and buff it a little bit and give it haste, importantly. So that's nice. Now, of course, aggressive red decks aren't hurting for creatures that have haste, but nevertheless, I think that will still provide some utility. Okay, next, I want to mention Reinforced Ronin because I'm not adding the card, and I want to say a word or two about why, because I know a lot of people are excited about it. Looks like the second coming of Goblin Guide. I've seen people say it's better than Goblin Guide. Seems like a popular opinion. So here's my maybe unpopular opinion. This is a... I'll read the card to you. It's a single red mana for Reinforced Ronin. It's a 2/2 artifact creature, human samurai. It has haste. At the beginning of your end step, return Reinforced Ronin to its owner's hand. It effectively has enforced dash. You can't do anything but dash the card. But also it has channel. So for one in a red, you can pitch this thing and draw a card. That's cool. It replaces itself. And you might well say, but John, you love cards that replace themselves. I do love cards that replace themselves. What I don't love is cards that have enforced dash that require me to pay this tariff in order to cast the thing every turn and smash with it every turn, right? Goblin Guide, you cast it and it just does what it says on the label. In my red decks, I want to curve out. I very badly want to curve out, and I want to end the game very quickly, right? I mean, I want to kill him on turn 4 or something. I don't want to be paying this extra red pip every turn. That just totally wrecks the curve. So I'm not happy with this thing. There are other complaints, I suppose, that you could make, like the thing can never block if all it can do is dash. Of course, we don't care about blocking much in our red decks, or if we do, we've probably already lost. Anyway, I don't like this card. It really sort of annoys me. We have no mono green cards, so let's move on to gold with Enthusiastic Mechanaut. This is a blue and a red for an artifact creature, Goblin Artificer. So for our 2 mana, we get a 2/2 with flying, who says artifact spells you cast cost 1 less to cast. So he's got this built-in cost reduction thing just for artifacts. So of course you're going to want this in an artifact deck. Otherwise it doesn't make a lot of sense. And your environment is going to want plenty of artifacts. At least for me, blue and red is sort of the natural home of artifacts. You can be doing artifact things elsewhere, most notably either white or black. But the home is an Izzet for artifacts. And the floor on this thing is pretty reasonable. It's a gold card, of course, so it's, you know, not easy to cast on curve necessarily. But for 2 mana, you're getting a 2/2 flyer. That's not bad at all. And then maybe it lets you do cute artifact things. I'm going to give it a whirl. All right, another Planeswalker. This is Kaito Shizuki, who costs 1 blue-black. Legendary Planeswalker Kaito enters with 3 loyalty. At the beginning of your end step, if Kaito Shizuki entered the battlefield this turn, he phases out. All right, that's cool. So he disappears like a ninja. That's exciting. He's got a +1 draw card and then discard a card unless you attacked this turn. -2, create a 1/1 blue ninja creature token with this creature can't be blocked. So you can make an unblockable ninja, but it can block, so that's good. So this can help protect the guy. And then it's got a -7, which is, you know, a lot. You get an emblem with whenever a creature you control deals combat damage to a player, search your library for a blue or black creature card, put it onto the battlefield, and then shuffle. Still some hoops, but potentially a powerful thing. But also you've upticked this guy a whole lot in order to get to that 7. Here is a 3-mana walker who enters with 3 loyalty, who can uptick to 4, or downtick without killing himself, right? Downtick and go down to 1. All of this seems like a great deal. I mean, this isn't Oko, but this looks like a very powerful creature. It's also a creature who natively protects himself, at least initially, by phasing out first time he enters the battlefield. This guy looks great. Okay, another Planeswalker. This is the last of them. Tamiyo, Completed Sage. She costs 2 green, blue, and then a Phyrexian, either green or blue. So either a Phyrexian green or a Phyrexian blue. So what does all that mean? You can pay 2 green, blue, blue, 5 mana, or 2 green, green, blue, 5 mana, or you can pay 2 green, blue, 4 mana, and 2 life. So that's a lot. That's a lot of options in how we cast her. Basically, you can cast her for 4 or 5 mana. That's neat. She enters with 5 loyalty, maybe, but let's read the box. If life was paid, this planeswalker enters with 2 fewer loyalty counters. So for 5 mana, she enters with 5 loyalty. If you pay 4 mana and 2 life, she enters with 3 loyalty. Her +1 says tap up to 1 target artifact or creature. It doesn't untap during its controller's next untap step. So she frosts things, much like the OG Tamiyo that we know and love. She's got a minus X. Exile target non-land permanent with mana value X from your graveyard. Create a token that's a copy of that card. So she can sort of reanimate things, and that looks extremely powerful. And so when she comes down, if she comes down at 5 mana, then she can reanimate something up to 5 CMC. That seems pretty good. So she can be this really weird 5 mana reanimation spell. And it's, you know, permanent, right? It doesn't have to be a creature that she's getting back. And then she's got an ultimate -7, create Tamiyo's Notebook, a legendary colorless artifact token with spells you cast cost 2 less to cast, and the ability tap to draw a card. And that's exciting too. And again, 7's not that far off. If she enters at 5, it just takes 2 upticks to get to the 7, and then she starts drawing you extra cards and reducing the cost of your spells. This looks like an excellent card, and despite being another gold planeswalker, looks definitely worth trying. Let's give her a go. It's cool. You can cast her for 4 instead of for 5 if you want. That's amazing. I like that flexibility a lot. We have an artifact, and that is Eater of Virtue. It's a single generic mana for a legendary artifact equipment. What does it do? Well, it's got equip 1, so that's cool. It costs 1 to cast and 1 to equip. Whenever equipped creature dies, exile it. Okay, that's not great. Equipped creature gets +2/+0. Hey, we got Bone Splitter. And as long as a card exiled with Eater of Virtue has flying, equipped creature has flying. The same is true for First Strike, Double Strike, Death Touch, Haste, Hexproof, Indestructible, Lifelink, Menace, Protection, Reach, Trample, and Vigilance. Oh my gosh. Keyword soup. So the point is, if you've got this on a First Striker, that First Striker dies. It does die for what it's worth. It does go to the yard and then it's exiled. I point this out just because I was talking with somebody the other day who was complaining that Eater of Virtue will cause you to lose death triggers. You won't get death triggers off of your creatures. And that's not the case. I'm not a judge, so I could be wrong about this, but I'm pretty sure the thing still dies. Anyway, I think we still get death triggers. So you've got this thing equipped to something with First Strike. Your thing with First Strike dies. It gets exiled. Now you equip this to something else. It's going to have First Strike. And then the same is true for all these other keywords. This is maybe not huge upside, but it is upside. The fact that when your creature dies, it gets exiled, that is in fact downside. So we've got a Bone Splitter with some upside and with some downside. Bone Splitter is great in aggro decks, right? This is like, I don't know what, maybe the 3rd best equipment or something for an aggro deck. I mean, what's the competition? Grafted War Gear is amazing. That's a first pickable card. There's Umezawa's Jitta. There's Bloodforged Battle Axe. That's a commander card not everybody's heard of. Go look it up if you haven't heard of it. I think it's a sweet card. I'll read it to you. Bloodforged Battle Axe. It costs 1 generic mana for an artifact equipment. It has equip 2. Equipped creature gets +2/+0. Whenever equipped creature deals combat damage to a player, create a token that's a copy of Bloodforged Battleaxe. This thing just starts copying itself if you can connect with it. So it's similar to Bone Splitter, although it is equip 2 instead of equip 1. So that is a big difference. It is still 1 mana to cast. But then this thing just, I mean, this thing can run away with games very quickly. You connect with it once and all of a sudden now you've got 2 Bloodforged Battleaxes and then they just spiral out of control, right? Each one of them, whenever it connects, can create another and you can get this like exponential growth, put the game away quickly. Anyway, Eater of Virtue, I think the upsides outweigh the downsides in most aggro decks, right? This isn't going to be true in every deck. You can definitely have decks where you really want stuff to hit the yard and not exile. But in most aggro decks, this probably doesn't matter a lot. Although maybe I should say in most red and white aggro decks, black aggro decks are much more likely to have recursion, not only in the sense of grave crawlers that will recur themselves from the yard, but also just other ways of buying things back from the yard. I'm thinking of things like Order of Midnight from Eldraine, who's got the adventure mode Alter Fate. Or Null Priest of Oblivion, who's a 2-mana 2/1, but she has Kicker for 3 and a black. So if you pay 6 mana and cast her, then you get to return something. Return a creature from your yard to the battlefield. She's cool. And then she's got Menace and Lifelink. Anyway, in black, the downside is a much more real downside here, so maybe you don't put it in your black aggro deck. Okay, moving on. Now, we've got this whole cycle of legendary lands. I guess in Wooburg order, the first is Eganjo, Seat of the Empire. This is white. They're all legendary lands. They all enter untapped. They all have channel, so this has channel for 2 and a white, and it deals 4 damage to attacking or blocking creature. And it's got this cost reduction thing. This ability costs 1 generic mana less to activate for each legendary creature you control, or whatever that's worth. The blue one is Otawara, Soaring City. It has channel for 3 and a blue. You can bounce an artifact, creature, enchantment, or planeswalker. Black is Takanuma, Abandoned Mire. It has channel for 3 and a black. Mill 3 cards and then return a creature or planeswalker from the graveyard to your hand. The red one is Sokenzen, Crucible of Defiance. For 3 and a red, pitch this thing and create 2 1/1 colorless spirit creature tokens, and they gain haste until end of turn. Okay. And then finally, the one that we really care about, Boseiju Who Endures. This is the green one. Has channel for just 1 and a green. Destroy target artifact, enchantment, or non-basic land an opponent controls. That player may search their library for a land card with a basic land type, put it onto the battlefield, and then shuffle. And then it's got the cost reduction thing. Okay, so Boseiju Who Endures is, you know, absolutely the best of this cycle, it seems to me. It seems almost unquestionable. I've seen people who are complaining about the card because it lets opponents tutor up cards that have a basic land type. So they can go find an ABR duel or find a shock land because, you know, Volcanic Island, it is an island and it is a mountain, right? So they can find it. But whatever, I don't know, whatever, right? So this thing, there's like almost no downside to this card. Or the opportunity cost of putting this thing in your deck is extremely low. Granted, it itself is not fetchable because it doesn't have a basic land type stapled onto it. None of them do. It's just legendary land. So you can't go find this with your Windswept Heath or something since it's not a forest. But it enters untapped and just taps for green. That's great. And it's got this amazing other mode where for 2 mana, you can, in a way that is extremely difficult to counter, because this is an activated ability and not a casting a spell, you can disenchant something or sinkhole something. I mean, just extremely flexible. This card looks excellent. I'm gonna try them all. You all know me, I love lands that do things. I love lands that do things. I don't need to preach to you about this again, I'm sure, but like every land that you draft is an extra pick that you've unlocked. You're like making one more pick matter than you would have otherwise, right? Because the person who drafts 0 lands, who drafts their 45 cards, only 23 of those cards matter, or whatever it is, in your 40 card deck. But every land you draft is making now, you know, 24 cards matter, 25 cards matter, 26 cards matter. Oh, so good. And these lands, they matter. They do things. I mean, this is occupying a land slot in your deck, so it's unlocking those extra picks, and yet it also functions as a spell, or it can. This looks awesome. This looks like the most reasonable of these by far. What else is good? Like, 3 mana, deal 4 damage to attacking or blocking creature. The white one, that's probably fine. Bouncing something for 4 mana, I don't know. Like, that's fine, I guess. It's expensive for these effects. A 4 mana bounce spell, that's not a great rate. But the thing is, it's a land. It's an untapped land that taps for blue, right? So the opportunity cost is so low for putting this in your deck. Basically, think of this as a land, except if you draw it later in the game, hey, it does this other thing, right? It's expensive, but you don't care. 4 mana to create 2 1/1s. I mean, this is not a great rate for the red one, but I don't know. You can regrow something for 3 and a black, you know, I don't know. I don't even know what the next best thing is. I guess the least expensive of them, which is 2 and a white to deal 4 damage to target attacking or blocking creature, I suppose I put that next after the green one. So what's the order for me? Like green, white, black, the regrow, and then I don't know what. The blue bounce thing, and then the red. I'm not sure that the other ones are going to stick around in the queue, but I feel like the green one has a good shot at it. Thank you for taking this tour with me, you guys. This has been a lot of fun. I gotta say, I'm hyped for this set. I didn't expect to be this hyped for the set, honestly. Like, I had pinned more hope on the Innistrad sequence that we just went through, and those were kind of dry for Cube, truth be known. Kamigawa has got me really stoked, and I hope it has you all stoked as well. I look forward to playing with these cards. Tune in next time. We'll talk about the cards that I'm adding to Petty Nobility, my lower-powered, more like Jenny Johnny-oriented environment. Let's keep hanging out and chatting Cube.